fans, this is Taylor McGregor here. You're listening to my good friend Kyle Stanley's Setup Man podcast.
Hey, Setup Nation, I cannot tell you how excited I am to have Taylor McGregor. She is the Cubs reporter on Marquee here on our show. Taylor, first of all, just thanks for being here. And second of all, I can't wait for fans to just kind of have a close interaction with you on this show right now to get closer to the Cubs players. So thanks again for being on.
Oh, I'm happy to be on. Thanks for asking me.
So I usually wait for fan questions till the end, but we had two fan questions that I have to start with in the beginning. And I'm sorry, I might mispronounce this guy's first name. I think it's John Ciambi. He says, why do you hate the RBI? John, how do you pronounce that, Taylor, first of all? Is it Ciambi?
Oh, my gosh. He would. So the backstory behind this is hilarious. So okay. It's John Ciambi for everybody who doesn't get the joke. And that is Boog on the Cubs broadcast. Truly one of my best friends in the entire world. And I say somebody who's influenced my career more than anyone. He's had such a huge impact on me and the way that I view the game and kind of my growth as a broadcaster. And to be honest, my growth as a person too. He's just so wonderful and has challenged me in a multitude of ways. The joke here is when he first started, I would say I was not as far along on my statistical awakening, if you will, okay. As I am right now. And with that, I challenged him on the ideal that RBIs matter and couldn't believe that he didn't think that they didn't matter. And then here we are. That was in 2021. You know, now fast forward to 2024, and I am like slapping my 2021 self thinking, oh my gosh, I can't even believe who I used to be. And the big joke is like, now I make comments like that to people, like guys are not getting paid for RBI. And to be honest, I don't really care how many RBIs they've driven in. So like, let's move on. And so it's just kind of a joke of just how much I've evolved in my viewpoint of the game. And in large credit to him, because I think he sat there, you know, those 3 years ago and kind of was like, oh, don't worry, Taylor, like we'll have these talks over time. And in his credit, we have. And I've definitely changed my viewpoint on RBI and a lot of other things in this game, to be fair.
You are the Babbitt Queen now.
The Babbitt Queen.
Well, and then I promise a second fan question. This one's from Mr. James DeShays.
Oh, boy.
So he said he heard that you have a good singing voice. Will you sing us a song? Come on, putting you on the spot. You got to
do it. No, I will not be singing, but, you know, God bless the two of them and everybody else on our crew, to be honest, because I greet them on the bus sometimes with my wonderful / not so wonderful vocals. And I love to karaoke. I love Whitney Houston. So, you know, maybe if you ever see me at a karaoke bar, I'll sing for you. But until then, I think I'm going to refrain from singing on the pod. Jim has a great singing voice as well. He's musically inclined.
Give him okay. Credit well, then too. I gotta get him back on here and ask him that question.
Yeah,
we'll throw
exactly.
it back on him. So Taylor, I'm excited for you to be here. And I, you know, was kind of doing some research. I didn't realize that it was 2020 when you came to the Cubs. Was that just like such a strange transition coming from the Rockies to the Cubs during COVID?
Yeah, you know, and hindsight is always 2020, but it was so hard because I'm trying to learn a new team. I'm trying to learn a new city. I'm trying to learn new coworkers, like a whole new getup with all of these parameters that were unprecedented. Nobody really knew how to handle anything. And I just look back on that time and I was like, I don't know what I talked about my first year of Marquee in 2020, because I literally didn't have access to the players. So God bless that. Fans at home were probably like, this girl brings nothing. And I probably didn't bring a whole lot, but that was because I just was trying to make the most of what I could do. And it was really, really challenging. So, yeah, that was really hard. I'm just so glad that we're past that and, you know, back to normalcy. And we can kind of laugh at those times now because it was rough.
Well, and before you did come to the Cubs, you were with the Rockies, and a mutual friend of ours that you worked with, Jenny Kavnar, she is now doing some big things with the A's. Can you just talk about that promotion for her and what it means for people like you in this space?
So well deserved for Jenny. She's worked so hard and so knowledgeable about the sport, and I'm just thrilled for her to get this opportunity. I was on the broadcast in 2018 when she did play-by-play on TV for AT&T Sportsnet for the first time. And to be honest, that was my first year with the Rockies, and it was on Jackie Robinson Day, so very early on in the season. I didn't really realize how big of a deal it was until kind of everything afterwards and all the attention that it got. But going into that night, I was like, oh, this is really cool for Jenny, but I just didn't realize how cool it would end up being. And to think about who she was as a broadcaster on that night back in 2018 to where she's at now and the hard work that she's put in, she deserves it first and foremost, whether she's a male or female, whatever. Like, she deserves what she's gotten. But the fact that she is a female, and the reality is there's no other primary play-by-play female in Major League Baseball, it's monumental for all women in this space. And I think for me, what it does is it gives me something to look at and say, oh, I could do that too. Like, she's put herself out there. She's worked really hard. And if I decide that's something I want to do, I can work hard and get there too. And to me, that's the coolest thing to come out of all this. I've said this before, I would never have dreamt this career up for myself if I didn't see other women doing the sideline role on a Major League Baseball broadcast. I just wouldn't have. And so the fact now that there's a woman in a play-by-play chair, it allows women everywhere to dream of maybe one day doing that similar job. So I just think representation is so important, and what Jenny's doing is amazing.
That's cool. Well, and we're going to get to Cubs talk here in a second, but I do think it's really important for people to understand your story, where you come from. And, you know, until you actually do some research, you don't really realize that you came from not only a baseball family, but a very major baseball family. And your dad was the former president of the Rockies. And another thing that a lot of people don't know is that your dad really suddenly passed away. And that I can't imagine how tough that must have been. But how much does that play a role in your decision to get into this career of being a sideline baseball reporter?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, a couple things to say. It's funny people call my family a baseball family, because I think there's a large part of me that still believes we're a football family, because my grandfather was a longtime high school football coach, and my dad played football. He played in the NFL and then made the transition and, you know, was the president of the Colorado Rockies. So we are a football family that inherited baseball as our sport growing up.
Nice.
So it's fun to kind of have a little bit of that. But I think when I think about my journey and why I wanted to do this, it was sports overall, and football and baseball were certainly at the top of the list. Being able to watch college football and then the NFL with my dad on the weekends is something that I'll cherish forever. And those memories are what drive me in a way. Like, I want to be a voice for the young girl at home watching football with her dad. And then when it comes to baseball, for me, I always say I kind of learned through osmosis. And because in order to spend time with my dad, I had to go to the ballpark. You know, Easter's and Father's Day's and Mother's Day's were all spent at the ballpark because my dad was working, and that's where we had to be. And so I learned the sport and fell in love with the sport because that's what I needed to do to spend time with my dad.
Okay.
And so to your point about me choosing this career and maybe choosing this career after my dad passed away, I certainly think there is an element of being around the ballpark, being around sports, that brings me closer to the feelings I had as a kid spending time with my dad. And I try to never take that for granted, of just how grateful and cool that is for me to just experience that on a day-to-day basis and get paid and create a career out of this. Yeah. It's certainly something that's super special. And I'm very grateful to my dad for showing me these wonderful sports and, you know, planting these seeds into my head early that, hey, I could do this one day.
Well, I think so many of us have a family tie to becoming, whether it's a sports fan, a Cubs fan, or just, you know, a fan in general, there's deep emotional roots of that, and no more emotional than, you know, suddenly losing a loved one. And so I just appreciate you sharing that. As we do go over that, I do want to make a really sharp transition into the Cubs. You are so close to the team. And I want to start with some of the relevant stuff that's going on right now. Let's talk about Adbert Alzolay. You know, you can just see with him coming off the field, and I know that Elise was at the game this weekend. You're over in New Jersey, but you probably saw after he blew that save against the Marlins, just coming off the field, screaming, looking like, you know, the world had ended essentially. I mean, you can just tell this guy is taking this very difficult. Knowing Adbert, how much do you think this is impacting him beyond the baseball field?
Well, I think there's a level of frustration for any athlete when they're not performing to the standard that they hold themselves to. I think with Adbert, he is such a team guy, and he loves being around his teammates. He's charismatic. He's a big personality. Not being able to perform for yourself is one thing, but not being able to perform for your teammates, I think, hits entirely different. And to me, that's where a lot of the frustration is probably coming from, of, hey, your team does their job of getting yourselves into a position to win a game, and then you're the one who goes out and blows it. And that's, I'm sure, a really tough pill to swallow. I've never experienced it, but that's my perception of the way that he feels. And all of that, in addition to the self-standard that he has for himself. So I can't say I understand the frustration because I've never been in his shoes, but I do kind of understand the frustration of letting people down and not performing to the standard that you hold yourself to. And that stinks.
Do you get a close-up look of just how the team or the coaches or he himself are working to try to figure this out? And if so, what have you seen that process look like from Adbert?
Yeah, I think, again, I wasn't there this weekend, but everybody's always trying to improve. And let's go back to a couple years ago where a lot of people questioned the decision to even make Adbert a closer because he couldn't get lefties out. He really struggled against lefties. And there was an evolution with the slider and locating it in different parts of the zone for different counts, and the way he evolved as a pitcher to inherently be able to neutralize both hitters, righties and lefties. And so for me, it's getting back to what they did a couple years ago and what's working, the shape of his slider. I mean, that was a pitch he added, I think, in 2020. And it's kind of been an evolution ever since then. And so getting back to what makes him good, I'm sure that's the focus out there in the bullpens day in and day out.
Yeah, you know, we kind of talk about it a lot, too. The bullpens, it's so strange. When you look at all other sports, there's no, like, just set part of the team that just goes and randomly stays out there away from the team. I mean, I can't imagine that being away from the dugout is helping with the mindset, but do you see these guys, the bullpen guys especially, are they clicky with themselves and trying to figure out ways to be able to make each other better? Is it not really that complex? Do they like to just be with the entire team? Like, How do you see those guys interacting with the rest of the team, and especially the second part of that, just really working together to try to be a cohesive bullpen to really get, you know, outs really 19 to 27?
Yeah, I would say collectively as a group, it's a pretty tight-knit group. But certainly there's an element of when you spend more time with certain people, you're going to get closer to them. And I see that out of the bullpen. I felt like they're coming into this season, a lot of big personalities out there with Alzolay. You add Neris and he's charismatic and fun. And then you have some of these younger guys who are just hungry for information, whether that's Luke Little, whether that's even a guy like a Hayden Wisniewski. There's certainly a hunger to want to grow and pick each other's brains. And I think they really do enjoy being with each other. So I certainly see them feeding off of each other. And listen, the bullpen is, it's interesting on every single team because there's going to be highs and lows. And oftentimes ERAs can kind of get inflated by one or two outings and maybe they don't tell the full story. But I think as the season goes on, you're going to really see these guys challenge each other and hopefully can turn the ship and kind of turn the overall narrative around the group around.
You brought up Neris, so I want to stick there for a second. He hasn't had quite the stuff or the control this year to be looked at as a, you know, serious closer at this point, but you mentioned that he's got the big personality and we heard a few things in spring training. What have you seen from a guy like Hector that he's brought from a personality standpoint to this bullpen and this team?
Yeah, I think one of the things he's brought is a consistency in his routine. I mean, he's a big personality. He's one of those guys you just naturally gravitate towards. He has a big smile on his face at all times. And I've really enjoyed getting to know him, to be honest, and kind of joking with him. And he brightens my day whenever I get to see him. But this is a guy who, over the past several years, has eaten up a lot of innings for the Astros and been a consistent go-to piece in that bullpen. And I've talked a lot with him about that and how do you help these younger guys who a year ago really couldn't pitch back to back to back very often, if ever, how do you help them really grow and be more consistently available? And he talked a lot about his routine. And so I think that's something that some of the younger guys are gravitating towards of, you know, knowing when to push yourself, knowing when to hold back a little bit, because it's a long season and you kind of have to be ready for anything.
Okay. Well, the bullpen is just one of the things that fans are wondering about right now. The other thing that they're wondering about is when Justin Steele comes back, what is this rotation going to look like? And already you've seen Ben Brown get moved back to the bullpen, at least for now. It looks like with the addition of Jameson Taillon back in the rotation. And let's be frank, Javier Assad has produced, but he seems like the guy that they like to kind of bring back and forth. And I bring this up to say Kyle Hendricks is just, you know, 4-5 starts actually in a row now to start the season. It has not been good. Two questions about Kyle from a personality and from a just leadership standpoint. It seems like the guy takes full ownership. So my question is, from behind the scenes, what does that look like? What does the ownership look like more beyond than just like, you know, him getting up in front of the camera after the Padres game and just straight up saying like, hey, it's not good and I need to figure this out. I'll ask that question first and I'll ask my second question, but what does that look like from your standpoint when the ownership that it looks like he takes?
I think it's exactly what you see on camera is the way he is in person. One thing about Kyle in my time covering the Cubs, he's always been accountable. And this is a guy in 21 and 22 really had his struggles. 23, it was a bounce back year for him. And he really put together a nice season. And then this year, you know, more of what we saw in 21 and 22. So with that, I've seen him searching. I've seen him be incredibly accountable, incredibly honest about what he's feeling and his frustrations and the things they're working through and working on, and him saying, hey, this is not good enough and I expect more from myself. And just going back to the team aspect, I don't know if there's anybody on the team who wears it more when they're not able to produce for the group of guys than he does. He is obviously a veteran on this team. There are a ton of young guys who really, really look up to him. They value his experience. They value everything that he has to say. And so I know he wears it when he can say all of these things to these younger players, but when you're not going out there and producing, it doesn't feel like it hits the same. So I know he certainly takes that to heart. And to be honest, it's kind of tough to watch from my perspective because I have so much respect for Kyle Hendricks. Mm. And he is just the easiest guy to deal with. He's so kind. He's so consistent. And those are the guys you root for. So it's been hard to watch him hit these bumps early on.
A lot of words that you brought up there that lead me to my next question. Just truthful, honest, and willing to take ownership. Let's use a crystal ball for a second and say that it is May 10th. Justin Steele is coming back and Kyle has now had what that would put us about 8 starts. And let's say that all 8 of those starts don't look much different than the first 5 so far. I see the organization being very loyal to Kyle, right? Any other pitcher going through what he's going through probably would have been demoted to the bullpen or have had options go back to AAA. But with Kyle, there is so much history there. He pitched game 7 of the World Series. He has over 250 starts for the Cubs, right? There's so much there. Do you see Kyle even saying to the organization, guys, like, let's be honest, I'm just not cutting it. And with Justin coming back, like, there's better options in this rotation? Or do you think Kyle still says, no, I need to figure this out. I need to do this for the team, and I need to figure out how to be able to be an effective pitcher for 5 or 6 innings?
I know it's a tough question. I think we're still a bit away from any, you know, drastic decision like that. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's still hope and belief that he can turn it around, and he could be a consistent guy like he was a year ago. So we'll see. And let's be honest, pitching depth is important. And so to just this early on in the season, take a guy out of the conversation wouldn't necessarily be the smartest either, because you don't know the way that everything else will be impacted by that. And in turn, you know, it impact what happens down the road. So I think we're still a little bit away from that. And I think there's a lot of hope still that, you know, Kyle can get back to being Kyle.
Cool. I want to transition to Ben Brown. This guy had a wild route right to the majors on day 2 of the season, unexpectedly, because of Justin Steele going down, comes in a tough situation, has a pretty bad second inning, but has just been locked down ever since then. Young guy, what have you seen from him in the dugout to just be able to evolve so quickly and be such a major piece in this pitching rotation and bullpen?
I think for him, a lot of what he deals with and handles is his mental aspect of the game. And I've had a ton of long conversations with him about the work that he did following the injury last year, how rough that was for him when he wasn't pitching well, he gets injured, and then all these expectations and hopes that maybe he would make his debut a year ago were not there. And you have to wear that, and you have to wonder what's next. And he kind of said, I had to really step back and realize that I couldn't ride the highs and lows of a baseball season, because unless you're a Cy Young Award winner, there are going to be highs and lows as a pitcher. That's just the reality. And so he kind of said he really worked a ton on removing himself from the highs and lows and just trying to be as consistent as possible to hopefully help your play be as consistent as possible. But when you're not riding the highs and the lows, it opens up a lot of different things. And so I give all the credit in the world to him after a really rough outing, his first go this season, which again, was against a talented Texas Rangers lineup. I'm not going to discredit that, but it was a bad box score nonetheless for Ben Brown. And he was able to move past that, and he's been solid since then. So I've been really impressed by him. He's young, he's eager, he's excited, he's a really nice kid, and I look forward to see what he could do the rest of the year.
So just out of curiosity, you said that he's trying not to ride the highs and lows. You've had some in-depth conversations. How do you not ride the highs and lows, right? That sounds like something that's really easily said, but tougher to be done. Does he tell you how he works on that himself?
Yeah, he's really into his faith. He's a Christian and talked a lot about his relationship with God and how he goes there and realizes that's the most important thing in his life, and baseball is not. And you know, there are going to be good days and bad days. But if you can work on trying to find neutrality through all of it, you're going to be better off in the long run. So yep, for him, it's his faith, and he's got a good perspective there.
That's cool. Another guy that Cubs fans have really started to get to love already is Michael Busch. Yeah. I got to see him at spring training, and no matter if it was a day that he was supposed to be there or not, he's out there working at first base, and it has paid off. I want to know from you, now that the season has started, do you still see Michael going out there and working on his craft before the games? What are the things that he's doing that have been translating now into the games to be one of, if not the best hitter on the team so far?
I think what's made the Cubs defense good the last couple of years is the consistent work from everybody out there. And Jonathan Mota is huge in handling that day in and day out. So I have seen the consistent work from Michael Busch, and I've talked to him about the transition to first base, and he was bummed out a couple weeks ago when he was, you know, unable to come up with some of those picks at first base, which let's be real, that's a tough transition. He played first base a little bit in college, but then coming up the Dodgers organization, he really didn't. And so it's coming back, learning a new position, learning all the different things that come along with playing with Dansby, Nico, Christopher Morel, or Nick Madrigal, whoever it's going to be at third base. You know, he talked about arm angles and knowing their tendencies. And those are all things that I think he's still processing. So the fact that he's been able to play a solid first base and then have the offensive start that he's had, it's been so impressive. And I look forward, again, I know I keep saying I'm looking forward to all these guys, but I am looking forward to this season because the reality is it's still early and we'll see how it all plays out.
You have had the pleasure of being right there front row to two Cubs players coming in from Japan now, Seiya Suzuki and Shota Imanaga. Seiya, you know, until really Ross sat him for those 5 or 6 days last year, he really had a ton of ups and downs, and now he's really stabilized. Unfortunately, with the injury, we're not going to see him for a bit. But it seems like Shota, on the other hand, has just come in here, and it's like, he's a team favorite. He is out there in the media. He's, you know, you saw the other day, he invited those fans from the bleachers to come down. It feels like the transition period that we talk about with these players is almost non-existent with him. But you tell me, have you seen the transition be easier for Shota? Has it been just as difficult for him, just like it was for Seiya? What's been the difference that you've seen?
Well, I think he has a little bit of a leg up on Seiya because there's another Japanese presence in the clubhouse. And that was something that I think we didn't talk enough about with Seiya, because I don't know if we really even understood just how challenging it was for him not having anybody else to talk to. You know, imagine going to a different country and nobody else spoke your language. So the only time you could communicate with anybody was when you had a translator present, and sometimes how lonely that could feel. And especially for Seiya, who's a very outgoing, he's a hilarious, he's a fun loving guy. You know, I'm sure that was really, really hard. And he made some comments where it kind of broke my heart just thinking, oh my gosh, this is hard. And so I think Shota is lucky that he has Seiya here with him. And to Shota's credit, I think he studied up a lot on the Cubs, was very prepared. He wants a connection with the fans. And I think there's little things that he can do and he has chosen to do that probably lift him up as well. You know, even just the way the fans have received him after the Ben Zobrist comment, his walkout music. Okay. I mean, the shirts. I'm sure there's an element that fills up his cup as well, you know? And so, yes, it's been so much fun as a fan to watch what he's doing to kind of immerse himself in the community. But I think there's an element for Shota that it's probably important for him to feel a connection in the ways that he's doing so.
That's cool. I've got a couple fan questions, and this was the perfect transition because Craig would like to know, have you learned any Japanese so that you can talk more to Shota or Seiya?
You know, I'm so bad at this. Arigato.
Yeah.
And it's thank you, I think.
Yeah, domo arigato.
Yeah, and so I need to be more consistent because I'll always ask Seiya, I'm like, how do you say this? How do you say that? And he'll say it, and then I'll say it back. And then I kind of forget and we move on. So I should be better about learning the Japanese. But I'll tell you what, I've learned a lot about their culture through them. And it's been pretty cool. I'm grateful to have both those guys in the clubhouse.
I love it. All right. A good question here from WJ on YouTube. What has been the biggest difference that you've seen with Craig Counsell and how he handles the team compared to David Ross?
Well, I think the obvious one, and I think this is apparent to fans, is just a little bit of the differences in personalities. You know, David Ross was Mr. Bubbly and outgoing, and there was a charisma about him. And I think Counsell is a little bit more reserved. But I also think he's sneaky funny and has like a sense of humor about him that people don't expect. And, you know, I think to me, like if we want to get really down to the nuts and bolts, the biggest thing is experience and Counsell. I thought Carter Hawkins said it really good on the Cubs broadcast the other day when asked, like, what are the tangible things that Craig brings? And he brought up how he'll talk about stuff that's going to happen 8 to 10 days in advance, right, and how we start thinking about it and be prepared for that. And that's not even something that Jed and Carter had, you know, been considering. And so I just think the forward thinking and, you know, the way that he views the 40-man roster, not just the guys in the big leagues, is interesting, and a lot of that comes with the experience that he brought to Chicago.
I love it. All right, Taylor, this has been a joy. We're going to end with our rapid fire session. We call this our 27th out. I've got five questions here, and I just want the first thing that comes to mind for you to go ahead and give me the answer. And Taylor, guys, has not been privy to these questions. So
I have not. I'm a little nervous.
All right. You ready to rock?
Let's do it.
Who's the funniest guy on the team?
Oh, Mark Leiter Jr.
Ooh, that's a surprise. Okay. Have you seen Mark Leiter Jr. or any guys pull any pranks either on you or anyone else that you want to share?
Jan is constantly pulling pranks on me. He's also a funny guy. So I don't even have all the, I'll tell you one the other day that he did to me. There was gum sitting out in the San Diego clubhouse, and he comes up to me and goes, "Yeah, you need some of this." I'm like, "Oh, great. So you're telling my breath smells. Thanks."
Oh, no.
I mean, he was kidding, I hope, but like, that's the kind of stuff.
Oh, God. I don't know.
I don't know. Jan's wonderful. Jan's wonderful. Yeah. But
that's not something anyone wants to hear. All right. How many guys, actually, I'm going to change this question. When Go Cubs Go comes on, do you sing along?
Of course.
Yes. Okay. Good. Is there any players that you see like always singing along, maybe like to themselves or straight out loud?
I'm sure there's, you know, the Christopher Morels. I thought one of the coolest moments a season ago was when Miguel Amaya, I was interviewing
was really cool.
And he just like was singing, and the only thing I knew to do was just stick the microphone in his face. I was like, I think the fans need to hear this, because I think there is an element that people at home forget that these guys are fans too, and they enjoy moments like that, just like the fans at home do.
Okay. Next question. Have you ever seen Ian Happ smile?
I feel like Ian's been smiling more this season. Maybe
that's
it's
good.
Because he got married in the offseason. I don't know.
There you go.
Really, that brings that out of him. But yeah, it's the joke that he doesn't, but he does. Ian's a really, really nice guy. And there are some smiles there. We just don't maybe get to see him very often.
There you go. Last rapid fire question here. What is it like? Tell me the experience of a Christopher Morel hug.
Oh, just genuine is the way I would describe it. It just feels like when he comes to give you a hug, like he really wants to hug you and just let you know that he cares. And I appreciate that.
Cool. We have one final question, and it is not a rapid fire question. It's just a fun one that I want you to tell me why, not just the answer, but also why. You're stuck on an island, all right, and you have to get off. Who are you bringing along with you? You only get to bring one person. Who are you bringing along with you to help you get off that island? Boog or JD?
Oh, gosh. Ooh.
And you got to tell me why. What skill do they bring that will help you get off that island?
I feel like both of them bring different skills in different ways.
Don't give me the politically correct answer. They got to hear this. who's got the skills to help you get off?
Well, Boog actually is a really good swimmer. He swims all the time.
Okay, there you go.
So maybe I just have to lean him because he could swim somewhere and get something for us to get off the island. Not that I would ever suggest just swimming out into the middle of the ocean, but he's a really good swimmer. So that's something people probably don't know.
Okay, that's good to know. Taylor McGregor, this has been a ton of fun. Thank you for joining us here on the Setup Man podcast, and go Cubs go for the rest of 2024. Appreciate you.
Yeah, it was so fun to be on with you. Thank you.